Hello, and welcome to the What Really Makes a Difference podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Whitaker. I've been a doctor of natural health care for over 20 years and a professional speaker on health and vitality. But everything I thought I knew about health was tested when my own health hit a landslide and I became a very sick patient. I've learned that showing up for our own health and vitality is a step-by-step journey that we take for the rest of our lives. And this podcast is about sharing some of the things that really make a difference on that journey with you. So grab your explorer's hat while we get ready to check out today's topic. My incredible guest network and I will be sharing some practical tools, current science, and ancient wisdom that we all need, no matter what stage we are at in our health and vitality. I've already got my hat on and my hand out. So let's dive in and we can all start walking each other home. Hey, welcome back. In today's conversation, I get to share a person with you who I am just getting to meet as well. We began talking because we were talking about the breather apparatus, and that's something you'll hear more about in this conversation. If you remember Dr. Tom Michaud on a previous episode, he was talking about how we can increase our diaphragm strength and what that can do in our bodies. It's a really great way to help low back pain, to help resiliency, to help your vagal tone, to help your nervous system regulate, and it caught my attention when Dr. Tom talked about it because Dr. Tom is brilliant. So I want to know what he knows. As I looked more into the breather apparatus and got my own, it really caught my attention because I could feel the difference that it was making in my own body. So being of curious mind, I called the people at Breather and I got hooked up with, and I ended up talking to the accounts manager who's named William Comer. That started a journey of getting to know each other and having a perspective that he shares that I am finding a welcome addition to my life. So today's episode is with Mr. William Comer, and we'll get to know him together. We have a lot to say about diaphragm strength, about breathing, and about health in general. He's a very physically active person and mentally active person as well. So it's a perspective that I think you will find really valuable. To get to know him a little bit more, I would explain him the way he would explain himself, which is a fifth generation Florida boy. He describes growing up in Florida as pre-Disney rural landscape. He grew up in the woods, in the orange groves, in the sand pits, dealing with snakes and hunting alligators and doing skateboarding and motocross. He's done triathlons, duathlons, road bikes, mountain bike races. He does running. He still does riding and racing motocross. And he went to the University of Central Florida. He got his BA in business. He was a teacher of teenagers for many years in the public school system. He became a real estate broker, had a successful business there, and then gave it up when he got a really great job offer to work with the breather and the people that are innovating that device and putting it forward. PN Medical is the name. He doesn't watch TV. He does read books. He basically grabs life with both hands and breathes all the life that he can into his experience. I think you'll enjoy our conversation, and I'm excited to share it with you. Without further ado, I give you Mr. William Comer. Hey, I am so excited to be in conversation, finally, in real time, real computer time at least, with William Comer. So we have had many discussions via email, we've had some conversations on the phone, and I'm just grateful for each one. I end up smiling, I end up laughing, I end up learning something, and I'm just really grateful to actually see your face today, Will.
So I'm glad to see you too. I'm glad to be here.
If you, dear listener, want to see his face, just look at the episode graphic and we'll see you for the first time together.
Face made for radio.
Face made for radio, that's great. So the reason that I have Will on today is because not only the conversations have been so good every time we have spoken, but because he has some really interesting and grounded things to say, both about spending quality time in life, about what creates more vitality in life that he's seen in his own, and from my perspective, that holds true to so many other people as well, but also some more information about specifically breathing, diaphragm strength and how that relates to many other areas of our life. And if you've listened to very many podcasts of mine, you know that I think breath ties to so many things. So it'll be a good one. So Will, I know you work for The Breather, which we'll talk about later, but can you tell me how you came to be working for The Breather and why it has turned into such a big part of your life and is turning into a big part of mine as well? Can you tell me your story?
Absolutely. So in 2019, I decided I was going to spend a winter because I'm a fifth generation Florida boy. I'm used to the heat and warmth all through the winter. So I said, I'm going to go to my place up in West North Carolina outside of Asheville and we'll spend the winter. And
that's a change from Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most people go the opposite way, Will.
y'all want to go against the tide, you know what I mean? So I'm up there. I'm having this beautiful run on a November morning, and I'm running on a park. Funny, I'm on this real technical part over in Bent Creek, and then when I come on the most smooth part of the mountain, I pick it up, and I'm running. All of a sudden, I'm flat on my face on the ground. My foot had caught a root because all the leaves had fallen. And dislocated my left shoulder, broke my ring finger in my right hand, dislocated and broke two ribs, had I was all cut up and everything because of the rocks. And I was about 45 minutes into an hour and 45 minute run. Like a typical bonehead, I went and finished the run. And I'm bleeding and stuff like that. All gets even better. So I run in the parking lot and the cars are, and a guy's talking to this woman. I run between them going back to my truck, and the guy goes, you know, I say hi to everybody. I'm a Southern boy. I say hi to everybody. I say, hey, y'all. And the guy goes, hey, man, you need help? And I'm like, I'm good. I didn't know what he's talking about. So I stop where my truck is, look down, and both my ultra running shoes are just full of blood down from my legs and all the cuts and stuff. So he helped me. We fixed myself up there at the truck. But I'm in a lot of pain at this point, you know. So I'm driving. So I get in the truck. I'm driving back to my place. And that guy, my possum was in the road dead, so I couldn't leave him. So I stopped and got out with one arm, put the possum over on the side of the road. Dignity, you know what I mean, for the little fella. And I drive on. So it gets ridiculous here in a second. But so I get back to
in
place.
A second.
Yeah, and a nurse lives next door to me. So I told her, and she said, man, you need to go to the hospital. I said, well, I haven't eaten yet. And she says, well, you need to get there. But I said, I'll call the emergency room and let them know you're coming. Sisters of Mercy up there. I said, okay, but I'm going to get something to eat first. So I go around the corner as an egg and I like it. Cafe. So I go there, and of course it has to be the most crowded day of the year. I have to wait an hour for a table. Finally, I hobble to a table. I'm there, and the manager comes up and goes, you all right, man? I said, yeah, honey, because he said, you're bleeding pretty bad on your leg and everything, and the way you're holding your arm. I said, yeah, I saddled an axe up on the mountain. I'm fixing to go to the emergency room. So he got my breakfast out there real quick. I ate it and I paid. And so I clock, you're gonna love this. I get in my truck, I drive there, I get out, and I forgot my wallet back at my place. So I had to climb back in my truck, use my other arm, drive back home, get in, come back in. And so I get in
you
there.
You are a country boy. I know a lot of country boys. Yeah, you come from good stock.
It was ridiculous. So I go in, and so I walk in. They take me right in because I told them, hey, I want to pay cash on this. I don't want to do insurance. I just want to pay cash. And all. So they take me right back, which was nice. And plus, the lady, she called in advance when I was coming. So I get back there, and my one finger was I kind of fixed it myself on the trail, you know, and then the lady said, the nurse, she goes, my God, it's crooked. And I said, well, she said, you have three crooked fingers. I said, well, I fixed those others myself too. And she said, well, this one's fresh. And so she redid it and said it straight. It hurt, but she did it. They treated me and stuff. I ended up getting out of there. And so there was this SLP I knew up there. And, you know, I don't know if you ever had dislocated and cracked ribs. I've had 11 of them over the years. First of all, you're guaranteed to sneeze that first night. You may not sneeze in 8 years, but you're going to sneeze that night no matter what. It doesn't matter. You're going to be on the ceiling. It hurts so bad. And I don't take anything. That's another thing I want to preface in there. I don't do pharmaceutical stuff. I don't do it. I just suffer through it. And so this guy tells me about, you know, because I'm having a little difficulty breathing and stuff, you know, obviously. For obvious reasons. And so he told me about Breather Fit. They just come out and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm looking at it and I said, you know, and it said, it's no pharmaceutical and stuff like that. And he said, no, really, you should do it. And he said, you know, you're the kind of guy, you have the discipline that you'll actually do it. So I bought it from him when I started using it. And
This was in the emergency room, or this was later?
No, this is a couple days later with an SLP that I knew through running up there and some different stuff and he had some, he'd had some regular breathers. He also, he bought a couple fits for his practice. So I just bought it from him, started using it. And that was in November. And then I was home back in Florida in February of 2020. And I was out riding in the Claremont area, and Claremont's the world, like the world's largest destination for triathletes, especially in the winter. You get from all more triathlons there. There used to be the National Training Center and all. It's real hilly around Claremont. And I was climbing this hill out there, grass on Grassy Lake Road. I got to the top, and everybody else about to, you know, leave everything on the ground there, you know, because everybody's breathing hard and stuff like that. And I was actually controlling my breath. And that's when it hit me. The only thing I'm doing different from my running and cycling and swimming, everything else, is this breather fit thing. And that's when I said, I guess it's working. You know, the light went off. And I really started paying attention to my breath then. Then, you know, from that day on, and my running, I started doing negative splits by controlling my breath, you know, so doing my second half of my run faster than my first half. And just be, and like this morning, I was doing like fartlek running, you know, where you pick up the pace for a while and you drop it down. And I would get my heart rate from 166 down to 103 to 99 in just about a minute, just by, you know, nasal breathing as I was running along very slow there, easy for the harder part. So I really learned to control my breath. And I attribute that a lot to breather fit. So now I'll jump ahead to 2 years ago. It's going to even get, it gets even more weird. So my ex-wife is recruited by a guy hiring for PN Medical. And she's a librarian, so she's like, it's not really sales and stuff like that. It's not really for me. And she goes, my ex-husband uses that thing, you know? And they said, really? And what's he do? And they said, well, he owns his own real estate company. He's had other companies, you know, owned a retail bike shop, just different businesses all through his adult life. But he uses it. So they called and asked if I'd come in for an interview. And I'll come in, whatever, you know what I mean? It'd be something fun to at least do, you know, it's that for an interview, because usually I just hire myself. And if I'm bad, I fire myself. I'm such a great guy, I rehire myself the next day, you know what I mean? So I go in, and we talked, and, you know, they like the fact that I use the breather fit already, and I was well aware of it, and the different protocols and everything. And then a few weeks later, they offered me a job, and I turned it down. Nothing against the company, and I think it's a great company, the thing, but I'd worked for myself, and I had little, you know, when you work for yourself for 30-something years and you're going to go work for somebody else, I thought, you know what, I'm good. And then they came back a couple months later and made me another offer, and I talked to a lady that worked for me for 20-something years in a real estate broker, so I just turned everything over to her. And I came to work at PN Medical, and I love it. I mean, I've got Mark Carboni's the owner, Peggy Nicholson. She's the one that invented the breather right down the road here in Orlando, Florida, 43 years ago. Peggy's the one that invented it. And then I work with Shandy and Jen. They're on the sales side and stuff. And Jen's my clinician that a lot of support, and there's Betsy support. So it's a great company with a lot, you know, it's just, I love the people here. And it's actually been, I've really enjoyed it. Kind of a side note. It's the first time in my adult life I've had weekends off. You know, it's kind of cool to work Monday through Friday. I will take that back. But I had my other business too. But I taught school for a few years. I taught middle school and junior high school, and many years ago, and also. Mm-hmm. So it's nice having weekends off again. But that's kind of how I got here to PN Medical, and I enjoy it. Every day's a lot of fun.
I love that. You know what? So when I was talking to you, you sent generously a couple breathers over for my family to try.
Right.
Because we have such a diverse group here. We're like our own little micro pod of experimentation.
Yeah. I sent different models to you, didn't I?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I have had trouble with my diaphragm and my breathing control since I got really sick. So climbing stairs, awful. Trying to figure out how to sing again with any sort of support under me, awful. So when Dr. Tom Michaud, you know, in a previous episode, he's the one that introduced me to the breather.
Right.
And I trust him so much that when he talked in that episode about what increasing your diaphragm strength can do for your low back, I was also having low back pain. So I decided to, you know, check out the breather online. I reached out to you to see about, you know, different options, because I got one to try. And I'm into trying to figure out what I can do that has the most benefit with the least cost. Like the breather is small, right? I can shove it in my purse. I have one in the sort of console of my car, and then I have one that's just like on my bedside table. And so when I'm waiting for carpool or whatever, I do that. I have noticed, wow, my breath control for singing. In fact, I was just practicing last night. We're preparing a Latin requiem, which is high and ridiculously hard. Right, and I noticed my breathing control is getting better, but my daughters, two of them play water polo, and one of them does mountain biking. And the girl that does mountain biking, she also is in Civil Air Patrol, and she does a lot of breathing commands. She's high in leadership. She does color guard. She has to like be the person that's calling out all of the commands for the whole squadron to fit to hear. And she has basically had to learn how to use her diaphragm. But when I said, hey, this thing helps diaphragm control, helps you have more power in it, helps you whatever, she just like unwrapped it, shoved it right in her mouth, turned it way up, was like, let's do this thing. And my daughter that plays water polo, just the other day, she was saying, you know what, I've decided to give this breather a try. And she said that she will be doing her breathing stuff while she's practicing tossing the ball. So it's not just breathing, it's also, can I do breathing control while I am throwing and catching a ball? And she said, you know what, I realized I wasn't really paying attention. I just kept turning up the tension on it, the resistance tension. She said, I noticed that I'm doing it at full tension, the breather fit, while I am throwing the ball back and forth. And she said, I mean, I didn't start like that. It got better and better and better, but they just started water polo season. And when she jumped in the water this time and is trying to tread water and catch and throw and breathe and be splashed in the face, she's like, man, this is different. She noticed quickly, and it doesn't take much. It takes a few repetitions of a few breaths a few times a day, like while I'm waiting for carpool or while she's just hanging out, tossing her ball anyway. It's pretty amazing.
Right. I use it on my endo board sometimes too. An endo board is a balance board.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm getting old. I mean, I'm 63 years old, so I stay pretty active. But you know, balance is a lot of thing when people get older; they lose and stuff like that. But and also, I never get lower back pain, anything like that. You know, my strong diaphragmatic muscles and stuff. And I'm on a bike. You know, I rode over 4 hours on Saturday on my gravel bike, and I rode my mountain bike for 2 hours Sunday morning. No lower back pain, any of that stuff. You know, now I know I've ridden a bike. You know, I mean, I got into cycling in 1983. So, you know, but you know, it's still though, I mean, just the fact that you know, I attribute part of that to my diaphragmatic muscles being stronger, than the average person. But I say the average person, I don't know.
So tell me about the breather for those who haven't seen it, haven't checked it out on any kind of website. Tell me what it looks like, what it does on the inhale, exhale.
Tell me. Okay. So we have the different models. The original breather, which is why I mentioned, referenced Peggy earlier, she invented it at Florida Hospital in 1980, I'm sorry, so 44 years ago. And from there, that's our bread and butter. I mean, that's what I sell the majority of during the day to clinicians across the United States, and it's just about everybody, I mean, can use it. It doesn't have to be just, you know, through the medical part. And then from there, we developed a breather recover, which has about 30% less resistance than the breather, the original breather. We do include in that box the standard mouthpiece. So that once a person gets stronger, they can just put the, and then they have the regular breather at that point. Okay.
So tell me when you would use the breather recover, and what was it even invented for? Just diaphragm strength or?
It's been a kind of out of a study with Mayo Clinic for long COVID patients. But we've also found severe Parkinson's, severe COPD, they use it as well. I will say that there is a breathing reset protocol that goes along with it, that because they found that people with long COVID and so forth could not do the RMT, the respiratory muscle training initially. So there's about a 2 week breathing protocol where the patient inhales diaphragmatically, so you know, not using their chest or shoulder, anything. But as they inhale, when they pause, they don't exhale. They let the diaphragmatic muscles recoil naturally. Then they do their next inhale again. And they do that for 2 weeks twice a day. Then they transfer into using they would use the breather recover on the lowest settings. And that's where they had the less resistance. And then they would go up and then eventually move into the regular mouthpiece, which would then convert it to a regular breather. at that point.
I love that. So I have known patients with long COVID. We thought long COVID might be part of what's going on with me. And I know there's lots of other people that struggle with breath, like after stroke, after all kinds of things like that. So I love that there's a dial that you can set in independently the resistance on your inhale and then so on your exhale. Okay.
Right. You have six numbers on the inspiratory, five on expiratory, which is interesting because I will even now. And of course, as you go up each dial, it gets, you know, you get more resistance. So if you're on six and five, you're on the highest resistance on the breather, you know, one and one would be the lowest. But if you ever read the book, which I've read, Breath, the one that Tom Nestor, and he talks James about Nestor. The guy, is it Stowe or Stroh in there? Stowe believed, even though he wasn't a clinician, he believed in putting more pressure on the expiratory. So sometimes I'll turn my inspiratory down and turn my expiratory up. I'll play with it. You know, I like you. I've got breather fits. Man, it's in my bathroom, side the bed, in the living room. One day, Huckleberry,
wherever you have time.
Running. Yeah, Huckleberry, my chocolate lab's running around with one. You know what I mean? But even though for my regular protocols that I'm on between, and I will get to that in my breather fit, but I have my three protocols. There are times that I'll just mess with it and play with it to kind of see the effects and stuff and what to see if I want to change the protocol going through it. So that's something.
If you're not feeling very well, you can do the breather recover to get better. Then there's the breather, which is, you know, the average. And then what other groups of people can use diaphragmatic strengthening? When would you use?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Even if somebody were weaker with Parkinson's, even with long COVID, they could use the Breather Blue, the original one, and just do the reset breathing protocol prior to. I think we had a meeting Friday. We're going to include that protocol in the next insert we have inside the box with the directions. So people can do that too with the regular breather. So once you go to the regular breather, then you have breather fit and breather voice. Breather fit, when you're on the highest levels, is 100% more resistance than the blue breather, the original. Which, so you're pushing some air to get through there. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is, if you're on breather blue, the original breather, and you're on six and five, you're on three on breather fit.
Okay.
That's how it correlates. Okay. So, you know, and then you have the protocols. Right now I'm doing a strength protocol on my breather fit. And so I do three sets of 10 in the morning and three sets of 10 in the evening, 6 days a week. I do take one day off like anything from running, cycling, because you are exercising those muscles. I do take a day off and let them heal and get stronger. Because that's when you get a lot. That's when, you know, your strength comes on when you're resting. And then we have so if I'm going to go do, let's say, six gap up in Georgia in September, it's 105 miles over six mountain passes on my bike. 6 or 8 weeks out, I will change to an endurance, which, and instead of doing a three sets of 10, I'll do one set of 40 or 50. But I'll turn it down a little bit. I won't be on the higher settings for strength. I may do four and four, or four and three. But I'll do 40 or 50 of them. And then, you know, with the inhale, you'll hear the valve catch. And then once the valve catches, I do 3 seconds up, I pause, 3 seconds down, I pause, and I start again. So in the strength, I would do 10 of those 3 times. In the endurance, I'll do the same thing, but 40 or 50 of them at a time. And then I'll do the same thing in the evening. And I do it, I know that the app, we do have the app, Breather Coach. You know, this is like 7 and 7 p.m. I do it after I run or cycle in the mornings, and I do it not before. I do it when I do my sit-ups and push-ups and stuff. That's when I do it. And then at night, I do it about a half hour before I go to bed. I kind of have a hard time turning my mind off.
Yeah.
And so that breathe. So I kind of use it, that breathing, it kind of, okay, I'm also breathing, I'm settling down. Okay. Yes. I need that. And so if I do it earlier, even at night, I'll just do it again. I'll just turn it out to a lower and just kind of just ease up myself. Because like I said, I just have a hard time turning everything off, you know.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. So first of all, I love that you talk about making sure you're breathing down in your diaphragm. So this whole conversation is making me really, really want to grab my breather. I can tell if we are listening to this in the car, we will be using the breather. But if you don't have that, right, just making sure that when you're breathing, you are breathing down lower. So you should feel the lower ribs expand. It should be like a literal body sensation thing. Keep your shoulders down. Don't raise your collarbones. Don't tense your neck. Don't breathe by trying to flex your jaw muscles. It's so weird, all the different ways that we try to breathe. Lots of that has to do with safety. Lots of that has to do with the state of your nervous system. But one thing that's interesting is your body can cue you into the state of your nervous system, the state of your safety, how overwhelmed you are by how you're breathing, But you can also cue it back, I have learned, by either pulling breath into your diaphragm or pulling it deeply into like your pelvic floor. When like just low, 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 almost like you're like blowing up a balloon. When right. I use the breather, I use it, you know, for strengthening, but I often use it to help calm myself down. It's like an immediate biofeedback, but remembering to turn down the resistance, that's a very good tip because I don't usually remember right. that. And sometimes that can make my sense of overwhelm a little more if it's then even harder to get air in. But if I am focusing on my breath and I turn the resistance way down, it is a way to get my sort of monkey mind back to just listening to the sound of the air going mm-hmm. through the valves, to just feel my ribs expanding, feel the muscles. It's like, okay, I got this. Like, I've right. got this. I am not like spinning out or coming outside of myself. I'm actually in. Mm-hmm. I'm in myself. It's a huge help.
Yeah, and then I can read. And by then I'm ready to finally doze off and stuff like that. You know, it just settles me down. And then I will go into, so like about a week out from an event, like let's say six gaps, since I use that already, about a week out, I'll go down to maintenance and I'll turn it down to maybe two and two. And I'll see it. Then I'll just do two sets of 10 twice a day, kind of like tapering.
Yeah.
You know, so I cut my running back, cut my cycling back, everything. And I cut that back as well. And then after the event for a few days, I'll leave it on maintenance and I'll take it back. I'll go back into strength, let's say, and I'll go back on a strength protocol. And then eventually another event's coming up. Oh yeah, endurance, baby. I'm there. And, you know, I like that stuff, you know?
I'm like, you'd have to like that stuff if you're cycling that long through the mountains. It's the people that
I didn't
like
say I was the smartest fella. Okay. But and then breather voice. So we were encouraging vocalists, you know, brass players, you know, woodwind mm-hmm. players to use, mm-hmm. and also public speakers to start using breather fit as well. And
yes,
they kind of won their own device. So it's basically the same dial pressure.
Yeah.
But there are different protocols, you know, for it. And, you know, I mean, I sing maybe out there with my heifers or something, but I don't sing, you know, just like dancing. I'm a wedding living room dancer. You don't know they just want me to dance anywhere else or sing, but
I don't think there's nowhere not to dance. Like, yes, dance in your living room. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hey, when you don't have TV, you got to do something for fun at night. You know what I mean?
Well, we will talk about that. I'm going to get there. But right. So I don't get distracted, I will say, as I have thought about the diaphragm and I've thought about breath, I just think about how much breath spirals into the rest of our life. So I mentioned my daughter. She's mm-hmm. just a badass type of girl. She just is.
Yeah.
But it was interesting when we went to her Civil Air Patrol meetings at first. I was impressed because there was quite a few girls there. But I come from a lot of firearms training background. I come from a lot mm-hmm. of stuff like that where it's mostly males. And
right.
I honestly appreciate it when the males are giving the group commands to the group because I can mm-hmm. hear them, right? Sometimes it bugs me when women come in and they're like, okay, do this. I'm like, ugh. Like, you've got to learn how to have some grit in your voice. But for me, it's frustrating as a woman when I am trying to like get the attention of someone. In fact, in my house, the phrase is my son, now that he has man voice, and my husband who has man voice, I'm like, hey, use man voice, get her attention. Uh-huh. Right? But what I've learned with my daughter is that was a thing that I don't need to say anymore. It's more like use your diaphragm because no one can outvolume my daughter now. But what I learned was that's not just a getting people's attention thing. That's more of a being able to have a presence on the field. If you're in a place that, you know, where you need to have some presence, her being able to dictate the commands means that she is able to step more into leadership, and she's a fantastic leader. So really the what you can do to help your voice be heard, I mean, it's your voice on a metaphysical level, on a physical level, on a how can I, you know, help people move with me? How can I lead better? Such a huge difference.
Confidence. I mean, what do you do before you have to go face people? You have to go do something. You take a deep breath.
Yeah.
You know, confidence, man. You just feel like, okay, I've got this and stuff. And, you know, and I'm so real quick, there's one more thing about the breather too. So last summer, I caught a summer cold. Summer colds in Florida are the worst. It's 98 degrees, 100% humidity. You just want to crawl away and die somewhere. And
I've never heard of a summer cold. I live in the high mountain desert. It is dry here. Dry, dry,
dry. Oh, yeah,
dry.
But when you get a cold here in the summer, it's miserable, and stuff like that. So what I do, what I do is I turn the dials down, and instead of using my regular protocol, I go off of it. I use it as a PEP device.
Okay.
A positive expiratory device. And it keeps my airways clear because I don't want the cold going down into my chest. So I use this PEP device. And
perfect.
I love it, man. Because I don't, once I said it gets in my chest, then I got to, then it's even longer if I get to get back and do all the fun stuff I like to do. And at my age, I feel like you're doing that fun stuff.
Oh, I'm so sorry I interrupted you.
That's okay.
I just fully did. I didn't. I apologize. When you're using it as that, so if you're typically quite healthy, but then you've got something going on with your immune system, what do you recommend doing?
I turn it down to two.
Okay.
I turn it down to two, both of them, expiratory and inspiratory. And then I just, like, five times a day, I'll do 10, 15 breaths. It's just hard. Hard as I can. Okay. So I'm almost like the huff cough. Just so I get that out, and I'm keeping my airways clear and stuff. And
awesome.
That's how I use it for that. And then once it's over, then I go back into a maintenance and up into my regular protocols at that point, once my cold's over or whatever.
Okay. And that hard expiration, the end, the whew, that you were just doing, that's when your pelvic floor comes online too. So for anybody who's also wanting to strengthen pelvic floor, basically, if you're like over 30, strengthen your pelvic floor is just what I'm going to say is a Cliff Notes version.
I don't care what age you are. I mean, I had a cracked coccyx years ago, so it's that was one of the worst things.
I had a bruised coccyx.
Like John Wayne for like 2 months, man.
I had a bruised coccyx in fifth grade, and I still remember it. I still like flinch.
It's horrible.
But shoot, what was I going to say? Oh, so if you don't have a device, this is how the progression kind of went in my family. Is we just did, normal breathing, like breathing, stress breathing, not really actually breathing. Then we read James Nestor's book and start to breathe through our noses. Now I literally am the person at sport events when the kids are starting to like lose their wind. But I mean when they're starting to flag, I'm like, breathe through your nose. That's like what I'm screaming as they're riding on their bikes. Your nose. Because you really can see the people who are breathing through their mouth and huffing. I get why you do it. Your nose gets all blocked. It's really freaking hard to breathe through your nose when you have that much resistance. But the more you can do it, the better you last.
I kind of leave that earlier on my run when I bring my, like today when it's kind of that fartlek interval kind of training when I was running. And when I brought it down before for the few minutes before I started it again, I want to get my heart rate way down. And immediately I'm just focusing on nasal breathing, as I'm running. Now I've slowed way down now, but I'm focusing and I, I've got, I'm on my Garmin, I can see my heart rate. My heart rate's dropping down, stuff like that. I had it down from 166 to 99 in a minute, and then I just did two more minutes like that and then took off again. So the nasal breathing is amazing. And I wish I'd have known that in the 1980s and 90s and 2000s. And, I found out later in life.
We did nasal breathing. I think that's all of us, man. We just progress and science is getting better and writing is coming forward. And I just am grateful. I'm grateful to be in a place where we can hear all this stuff and get it. But we did nasal breathing. Then we got into some breath work and started to learn really physically embody what it felt like to breathe in a way that does different things in your body, in a way that either helps you go into trauma, come out of trauma, calm down, wake up. Like the breath is just such a cue. And then my husband does a lot of survivalist type things. He is in the mountains a lot. Yeah. He likes to do backpacking. And he was noticing that he was really flagging. So he started to look at resistance devices to see if he could mimic what it was like when you have to breathe when there's not as much air. I mean, we live at 6,000 feet elevation, but he'll easily hike up and be in 10 or 11,000 foot elevation in the backwoods when he's hunting for elk or stuff like that. So he looked at resistance devices. He's had a big full mask. He's had a mask that goes over nose and mouth. He's had this like binky looking thing. and we've tried all those things. What we're really liking about the breather. So I'm just telling people the progression because you don't have to have a breather device. You can do other things. But what we've learned by going through all those stages is that, man, if you haven't bought anything to help you kind of level up your breathing, if you're ready to put more resistance on it and you want to you know, help your back or help your whatever, I would just go to either the breather or the breather fit, depending on what your needs are, because of that ability to change the dial. And because right. it's like, it's ease, I can just keep it in the carpool, and it's not like I'm like, you know, putting a full mask on my face while I'm waiting. I think my teenage daughters would not appreciate that.
And that's what the SLP up in Asheville area, he was telling me, hey man, you know, this thing is, you know, and he knew I had the discipline, because I'll go David Goggins on myself every day.
You know, I if just I'm laying heard him in bed, speak live.
Oh yeah, I love David Goggins. I'll be laying in bed some mornings, you know, and it's like, maybe I'll run today. And then all of a sudden David Goggins gets yes. in my ear and just chews and tells me what a horrible person I am and everything. I'm up getting dressed. I'm out of here, Dave. I'm gone.
Okay.
So I'm afraid of David Goggins enough that I make sure I use it. But I just a real tip on it too. Because if you go on the website, they show the lady sitting down and stuff using the breather. I never sit and use it. I always stand. And even though I've had years of using it now, to this day, you know, I hold it in my left hand and I put my right hand on my diaphragm, my belly, as accountability measure, as an accountability measure. And I do it standing up. I've done it before laying on the ground, but, you know, prone, which is fine too. But I prefer to stand up, you know, put my hand on my belly, because I want to keep myself accountable while I'm doing it. I don't want to take any shortcuts or get lazy or anything like that. So yeah, I want to keep myself accountable. That's a little tip there.
Yeah, laying down on your back, I have found to be a really great way to do some of the pelvic floor engagement. Just laying and taking deep, deep breaths way down deep in your hips is one of the very best ways that you can re-sync your respiratory diaphragm and your pelvic diaphragm together. And it does amazing things for your body. So when I lay down, my cue is I'm actually feeling down kind of just lower than my belly button, taking those deep, 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 deep breaths and letting them out. And then I'm doing kind of both things at once, but you can do that standing also. It's just,
but it's here when you mentioned trauma. So we had this lady that worked here, very nice lady, very smart. And I miss her. She's not here anymore, but she had a lot of trauma in her life. So when she was doing the breather, you know, I would come in and do it again here. And she was more comfortable laying on the floor. Yeah. Doing it. So I got down the floor with her. That's how I started using the floor. It, you know, it's kind of comical. Somebody walks in the office, he's got people laying on the floor doing a breather.
That's the best.
Like, yeah, I know. It's like, what are y'all doing? Hey, man, come on down, you know? But for her, that was, and she'd had a lot of trauma in her life. And to her, standing up or sitting down, and just for her to breathe and do that, she needed to be on the laying down. And I'm like,
all right,
I'll be up for anything. You know what I mean? I'm like, let's go.
Listen to your body. Listen to you. Yeah, there's usually a reason you're more comfortable in one than the other. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've all had trauma. We handle it differently. You know, like growing up, you know, out thus, you know, my dad's like, put that bone back in. Let's get back over here. You know? Okay, Dad. You know, it's like,
my daughter was just downstairs. Oh, I hope so much she becomes a stand-up comedian, because when she starts to talk about stories that she's seen dads do, or what it's like to be raised doing this or that or this or that, I just laugh, man. I laugh. And like, you know, I'm like, I'm so glad you're telling them this way, because when you used to tell the stories, I was like, I mean, if you say that a little different, we're going to have Child Protective Services here. And it wasn't that bad. you know, stuff happens.
Some stuff I did, or my dad did, would be like, if you said that today, people would be freaking out, you know? Oh, my God, I can't believe you did that. What? I free-ranged my kids. They were like, I free-ranged them. I got there and play, man.
So let's move on to this. Basically, okay. Your grandkids are still free-ranged. I think
absolutely.
A huge piece of vitality and health are doing the things that bring us vitality and health right now. Like not waiting for later, not trying to fight aging by doing anti-aging creams or whatever. Like, we are all going to age. And what
absolutely.
Has proven out in culture, in science, in just good old-fashioned observation, is that the people that tend to age the best are the people that are trying to live with the most vitality now. Like, now, more conversations, more movement, more creation, more collaboration, more real food, more open air, more free time, more all the things that we want. That is our anti-aging. Like, save your freaking money for all of the stuff you have to do to try to repair it and put it into now. And a free range is kind of like a new a title that we use for it that describes so much. But I know that's kind of how you have worked with your children, with yourself, and now with your grandchildren. Can you tell me what drives that philosophy, or what you've noticed, or why you're doing it different? Because you're an information gatherer. If it wasn't making sense to you, if it wasn't giving you results that you liked, I know you wouldn't be doing that. So what is it that you like about being free range?
Okay, well, and let me preface it with this. I've earned every wrinkle, and I've earned every bit of this antique blonde hair.
Antique blonde.
That's what the grandkids call me Grand Dude. Because I'll still go out and skate on our ramp. We have a quarter pile, still skateboard on that. I can wheelie my bicycle, my mountain bike. I ride my dirt bike. I do all the stuff. You know, I still do everything that I did before. Not that level, obviously. I'm 63. I can't do quite what I could then. It's like crashing. It's not the crashing that hurts. It's a sudden stop at the end, you know. And at my age, that's what hurts even more. But no, to be honest with you, I saw no daddy issues or anything like that. But I saw a dad who ran a big company, grew up with him, and gave us a great life. So but he missed a lot. Like, he never saw me play baseball, you know, saw me race motocross a little bit here and there, but a lot of things the old man missed out on. And he passed away 3 years. He's in his 90s, you know, smart guy, went to his office 6 days a week till he's 86. But, you know, he didn't move as much as he got older, and every one of his health problems were because, you know, he just wasn't moving and stuff. And I was never going to let that happen. And actually, before he died, a few days before he died, he told me, he said, keep doing everything you do, man. Just keep doing every bit of it, you know? And you know, I'm not going to stop. I may as well die if I'm going to stop doing that. So I wanted my kids. Yeah. So one thing I noticed about TV years ago, TV shows, and I'm not anti-TV. I don't have one and don't watch it. But I noticed something. These sitcoms and these TV shows, they're never watching TV. They're always living their life. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, well, if they ain't watching TV, I'm not going to either. I'm living my life. And so I got rid of it. And, you know, and that was part of the reason. And my kids were going to prep school. I'd spend a lot of money on that. I'm going to watch TV. They're going to study and play their sports and be free range. So I just made a decision at that. And after 2 weeks, no TV, the kids didn't even think about it anymore. You know, they're like, oh, they don't even care and stuff and all. And it was pretty funny, though. It's just like a little sidebar. So they went to this really nice, probably the best prep school in the state of Florida called Lake Highland Prep. And one day we were in our kitchen downtown, and this kid, I just gotten actually back from Utah and I'd been mountain biking out there at Moab and stuff. Mm. And I'd flown in, and my mountain bike was in the kitchen. And this kid comes in our house, and he's with Lance, my son. The kid's like, hey, Lance, are y'all like really poor? And Lance is like, I don't know why. The guy goes, y'all don't have a TV anywhere. And then he goes, and there's a mountain bike in your kitchen. Lance goes, that's a really expensive mountain bike. just perspective, you know. The kid thought we were poor to have a TV. Whereas I thought we were wealthier because we didn't have one, you know?
Exactly. My daughter, one of my other daughters, she came up to me the other day when we were talking about how easy it was to get distracted on tech. Mm-hmm. I have tried and tried to make it so there is less tech and more conversation, but I feel like it was like a fight of a sweeping tide. And just my voice going, no, please, let's do something else, right? But So what I have decided is we just talk about it more, right? About learning, especially Yael Shai is a woman I had on a previous episode. And we talked about mindfulness and tech and about noticing when you're going to reach for tech and why and what you're trying to accomplish or set or how to monitor yourself. So it becomes something that can help you instead of distracting you from your life, like something that can help you be more in your life. And so Jade and I were having this conversation, and she said she had watched something online where the guy said, when you are choosing how to spend your time, I want you to imagine if you were to go with your children and grandchildren to the theater at the end of your life and watch a movie of your life, and they could see what you really did. Like, how much of that time is you watching somebody else live their life instead of getting up? Like, if they were to watch you every day, and you're sitting at a desk at school, and then you're sitting hunched over your iPad, is that something that is very, like, that you would want to be showing them? And if not, do what you want to do.
And absolutely.
I think of that. I just think of that all the time. Yeah. It doesn't mean that like resting and chilling your mind and watching a little something is bad. It's all just, right. Let's take a moment to pause and think about what we're actually doing with the time that's given to us.
Yeah,
because grand dudes that doesn't happen while you're sitting on the couch. That happens intentionally.
No, absolutely not. Because I get out and I engage with them and I take them, like even my own kids, you know, when they were young, I had them out riding bikes after school. And I had them, you know, playing and they did sports and you know, Lance did everything from baseball, football, basketball, skateboard, surfed, rode motocross, raced BMX. My daughter, Erica, she did, you know, she played softball and did some track, and Julia did cross country and cheerleading and horseback riding. She did the hunter jumper stuff. And, you know, so I always kept them, you know, moving and doing stuff. And then, you know, and then I love poetry, so I'd have them, we read poetry and I still like the classics, and, you know, we went through Old Yeller and, you know, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, I got Chocolate Lab named Huckleberry now after Huckleberry Finn. I mean, you know,
you are a country boy, Will.
I have an affinity for Labrador Retrievers. I mean, I've had all colors, and my last three have been chocolates. And you know, and so we had Labrador Retrievers in the house, which is complete comedy at all times anyway, you know. And so I had that kind of household where, you know, I wanted the kids to express themselves. And I love music. There's always music playing, too. So we had the music, the poetry, the books, the kids playing sports. They're getting a good education. They're learning Latin. They're, you know, I'm preparing these kids. And in a very young age, they learned gun safety. I didn't want my kids walking into somebody else's home and some kid pulls out a gun because they think it's cool. Hey, my parents had. Mm-hmm. I wanted my kids to know, hey, man, that's not a toy. Okay, mm-hmm. You get out of there immediately and get away from that because you know how dangerous it is. But because it's not the gun that's dangerous, the person holding it.
As with all things. It's not the knife. It's not even the Bible. It's the person holding it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so my kids knew from experience and being trained properly from a young age that, hey, man, these things, you know, guns are great in the right hands and used properly with safety measures put in. They're great. But, you know, some dad leaving them, you know, in my real estate business. One day I walk in a house in downtown and a guy's got a loaded AR up on his wall where a kid could reach it. And I couldn't help myself. I'm like, hey, man, that's not the smartest decision to make right there. You know what I mean? You know, and I lectured him on, you know, gun safety. And because then something goes wrong and everybody says, get rid of the guns. I'm like, ain't the gun. We've never had an accident at my home. We don't want to shoot anybody or anything like that. But you know what's
so funny? The people that I know that are the most pro gun rights are mm-hmm. not the like crazies, really. It's the ones that want to have the right to defend themselves, their family, their country. And also are mad as hell at people who are not responsible about it because they don't want the irresponsible to take away the rights.
And because it makes us look bad.
Exactly. It's just like anything else. It is the person, not the inanimate object. Yep.
So yeah, I was real strict with my kids on that and stuff. And then, of course, you know, the whole thing when they get on to drive, you know, they have to learn how to change a tire, jump start it before they let them leave the house and all that with her car, Jeep, truck or Jeep or whatever, you know, and stuff like that. And so I just raise them like that, and barefoot a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
I sent that picture of my granddaughter, learned how to use a saw on a felled tree with my son showing her. Notice she's barefoot there. The angle of the picture looks like she could cut her foot, but there was plenty of distance there, but it was just,
I think,
but she spends 80 to 90% of her life barefoot running around. They're healthier. The kids are healthier. They have better balance. They don't have the foot, you know, issues that you get and stuff. And my grandkids they're in Virginia now, right now, because my oldest daughter works up there in banking, you know, so they're up, they have to live up there in the cold. But hey, you know what? They come down and we have a blast. And then mother grandson, he does, you know, he skateboards in, you know, in pools and skate parks. And You know, plays basketball and played baseball. You know, he also does that thing where the kids run around, they do flips off everything, like they run up the wall and do a backflip. He's got a lot of balance like that and all. So, you know, we just turn them loose out there. And, of course, well, and they're around the animals as well.
And all of that is foot strength. All of that is balance, foot strength, diaphragm, hips, brain, all of it. And, man, when you're actively using it, and it's fun, that's so great. I mean, I had all these ideas about what I wanted my children to do. I love how you trained them in automotive, what they need to be able to show you first. I wanted them to be able to show me martial arts moves that they know before they date. Lots of stuff. There really is only so many hours. There really is only so much time, only so much energy, only so much focus. And I think that is part of the mindful decision making that we need to do in our lives. Because if we get too tired, man, it takes energy, it takes vitality to be present in that. But if you're trying to overwork and overschedule, and then you're exhausted and so you overtech, then you don't have the time and the energy to come forward to do those other things, the meaningful things that you'll remember. Like at the end of the day, the things that I'm writing, I have a little thing I write in nearly every night that's the thing, the best moments of the day, the worst moments of the day, and the things I'm grateful for. And every time that I'm writing that, I think, man, the things I am most grateful for, or that came up, or that were the best, they are not the things that I controlled and put into the schedule, right? They aren't the things I would have planned when I woke up this morning. They're the things that came up that I had the presence of mind to show up for and to engage with, or that other people did that for me, that showed up with presence or with conversation or a thing that they said where they paused. It's like you wake up out of the dream and connect. And the more connection points there are in a day, that is a life I want to live. That is a life I want to live.
Absolutely. And I think I use the free ranging to pick up my slack, because they learned a lot from free ranging. They had to make decisions out there. And sometimes their decisions were good. Sometimes they were bad. And they were bad. They were consequences, you know, and that's okay. It was good. And all another thing too is I never bought my kids a phone, a cell phone. Never bought them a cell phone.
I never bought them cards. And then I did succumb.
Once again,
there's
definitely
pros and cons, but yes, tell me your experience.
Absolutely. And look, I recognize that. I do. I just have my way of doing things, you know, and I figured that, hey, man, my answer to my kids, of course, the school, everybody had like an iPhone or when they first came out, or the other phones and stuff like that. And I was telling my kids, hey, man, are you making a living with your phone? Do you need it for work? No. I said, okay, you're good. You know, I just stopped right there, you know, and then one day when Lance did get a phone when he was older, I remember we were driving down the road. He first gotten a phone. His mom actually bought it for him because we'd been divorced then. So she sent him home with a phone. And we're driving down the road, and I'm talking to him. We're having an important conversation about something. Phone rings. Lance answers it. I looked over at him. I reached over. I pulled the phone out off his ear, held it in my hand, rolled my window down. I threw it out on the highway and broke the phone. So it's like, and I told him, I said, when I'm talking to you, you don't ever again, you know, that's rude and it's disrespectful. You don't do that. He learned a lesson that day. You know, what's a phone call? Who cares? He learned it. What that phone call meant, nothing. Another thing, too, like taking care of equipment. You know, we grew up in riding motorcycles, motocross, have to take care of a tractor, all that stuff. You'd have to take care of your equipment, your truck. And when the kids were 16, I got them a vehicle, and Lance got a pickup, and Julia got a Jeep, and Eric got a Honda, something like that, because that's what they wanted. And but there was responsibility that goes with that as well. And I'll never forget one time in February, on a Friday afternoon, Lance came home. The truck was all dirty. And I'm like, hey, man, you going to clean the truck? Yes, sir, I'm going to do it. Okay. Next morning, I get up, I go for a long run, I come back, you know, you're going to clean the truck, Lance? I'm going to get it done today. Okay, all right. Sunday morning, I go bike ride with my friends, I come back, truck's still dirty. You going to clean? I'm going to take care of it, Dad. Sunday night, he goes to bed, and we had a cold front come in February, and the cold front came through that early evening, and then the rains and all came through, thunderstorms and all that, and it just really cold after, especially for Florida. And he had school the next morning, he had to be up at 5 for baseball practice. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I went there, turned his light on in his room. I said, okay, man, let's go wash the truck. I'll get it. I said, no, you're doing it. I gave you all weekend. So I sat there. I dropped the tailgate, and I sat there with my Labrador Retriever, Reagan. We sat on the tailgate together, and we watched him wash the truck at 1 o'clock in the morning. and he'd gripe and complain and everything else. I tell you what, next time he's told to what, he didn't have a dirty truck after that, you know, just learned a lesson, man. You're going to do it, or you're going to do it your way or my way. It's going, but the way I looked at it is I paid the bills. So, you know,
so you're going to take care of it.
Absolutely. And plus I was trying to teach him lessons in life. You know what I mean? Everything I did, I try to teach him, hey man, you know, one day you're going to be on your own. And I do feel good that if I'm walking out here today and I go for a bike ride this evening and somebody plows me and I'm done, I feel good that my kids I know can all take care of themselves, you know, and they can take care of their families. That's a good feeling to have, to be honest with you. It really is. And you know, I'm sure younger people are that guy, I don't know what he's talking about. But as you get older, you reflect on that. And you do want that, you know, that calmness that, you know, okay, hey, man, you know, that part's done. Okay, they can take – my son, it's kind of hard to talk about what he did, but, you know, he did combat tours in the military stuff, and he's a bad dude. I mean, he can take care of whatever he needs to, okay? And I know that his family is safe with him and you know, his daughter and son and his wife, the property, his animals, they're all safe when he's there. And I like that. I like my daughters know how to take care of themselves, can protect themselves. You know, Julia and Erica both can take care of themselves as well. And Erica's husband, you know, Aaron, he can take care of himself. You know, he's a man. He's not a fluffy guy. He can take care of himself. And that's important, you know. Yeah. Without a doubt.
You know, one of the best compliments I've been given, and I giggle about it because it's not a compliment I would have thought was a compliment at one point. I would have thought it was like, you know, a commentary on my parenting and saying we're doing something wild or something. But my brother-in-law, who's a very analytical, very successful, but a very like to the point, let's just speak how I see it, right? We were talking about survival, I think, or there's just in Utah, there's one big freeway that goes up the middle. Right. And if crap were to ever hit the fan, right, zombie apocalypse,
right,
massive nation invading us, whatever, and people were trying to get from one place to the other in the state, most roads lead to that one interstate, right? It would be huge jams unless you know your way around. And as we were talking about, you know, navigating different situations, how would you do this? Where would we meet? How could we keep this together? You know, he was like, all I know is this. I hope my kids find your kids. Because wherever the Whitaker kids are, they're going to figure it out. They're just going to figure it out. And I thought, hey, like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Those are great life skills to have. Those are great life skills to have, you know. And we've always had a plan, you know. We all, you know, hey, we're going to meet here. We'll do this. You know, we'll take care of that. And you know, we're fortunate that we have, you know, we have food supply. We have heifers. And, you know, we have chickens and, you know. We're not going to eat our dogs, but we have dogs, you know, for protection and stuff like that. But you know, we know how to hunt, you know, we know how to fish. We can work. I mean, I'm not a master mechanic, but I can get things done. You know, we can get things done and keep things running and stuff like that. And we have water and we know how to grow things and we don't till the soil.
Yay! Thank you. We don't. Go back to William DeMille episode. Thank you.
That's right. That's mostly, I think, mostly commercial farms that do that kind of stuff. The big commercial farms and all that ruin everything. You know, we don't do that stuff. You know, we grow and grow really well. So you know, these are all skills, you know, to have. But the thing is, you don't have to be out on a big property like that. My house here in town, you can get you'd be surprised on a small little patch in your yard what you can grow.
Yeah. And how fun it is, truthfully.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
or a little, you know, you can, or if you're in an apartment, you can get one of the wood planter boxes. Yeah, thank you. I'm drawing a blank on it. Get one of those and grow some fruits and vegetables in that, and it's not that difficult to do. You know, take care of yourself and have a backup breathing, and or if not even if and hoping never to use it like that. Hope you just get to use it for fun, eating the good stuff, and yeah. When we eat beef, you know, our heifers, they eat grass. They eat locally grown coastal hay, and then we throw some whole corn and some little pellets out there for a treat for them. We don't inoculate them. We don't do all these different things. And when people eat the meat, it's like they're like, wow, man, this tastes different. Yeah, it's called fresh, you know, and it's completely different. And
fresh, healthy, non-stressed, completely different hormones running through their body. I mean, they are living beings, same as us, and their surroundings and their food and their sense of fear or safety. It all matters.
Oh, and we do keep them safe. We keep donkeys out there too. Donkeys are your security. You know, it's kind of funny, but they are.
They
You know,
are?
donkeys.
Why?
Oh yeah,
Because they're
donkeys are
big, loud,
great
sound?
security for the, huh?
What do they do? How do they
They'll kick. You
secure?
know what? If you get coyotes out there, wild hogs, donkeys will kick them. Everything. Donkeys are great security on a property
Really?
with the heifers. Yeah, and you know they befriend them too. They're out there like you know being friends, hanging out and stuff. And yeah, especially if one calves or something, you know the donkeys are really good to have out there as well because you know you got the calf out there. And so it's great to have donkeys on the property and. They're fun too, you know. I mean, they're, you know, listening to them out there, you know, and all that stuff. And then all the chickens, and our chickens are actually truly free range. We're not the U.S. government. Was it 3x3 they consider free range? This is ridiculous, you know. I mean, we turn them out all day and they run all over the property. They know to come back in at night, though.
Yeah.
Chickens aren't the smartest thing, but they know in the evening if they don't get back in that coop that they're going to have a rough night, you
Yes,
know.
they are.
And the roosters run around and help, you know, help us too, you know, gather them up and stuff like that. And we get them in the coops at night and stuff, and it's all good. And then, you know, collect all the eggs and we get to collect the eggs twice a day and sell them and sell a lot of them, keep some of them, you know, they're all fresh. And we only use local feed mill. That's where we get the feed for the chickens from a local feed mill. And of course, where they eat like whatever poor insects running around the ground or whatever out there.
Yeah,
They get
yeah.
it. You know, it's like I saw them one time, like eight of them, you know, like chasing after the one hen, and she had a that hen cockroach in her mouth. I'm like, oh my gosh, come on, you know. It's
Oh.
like, yeah. I think I ain't eating no eggs.
Yeah, no thanks. Not thinking about it. Not thinking about it. You
That's
know,
getting
I think about
sold
that
for her.
sometimes with us. I was in with us as in with us as human beings. I was
Right.
in my graduate school. I remember my nutrition professor one time. No. It was a guest lecturer that was like I think assistant president of the school. He came in and he was talking about the wonder that it is to have a human body. And he said, "You think you know what you're doing? Like you think you know what you're doing in this body? You take this Twinkie, make an eyeball out of it." And I thought, man, it is amazing what we are making our bodies out of. I mean, but when we give it good quality nutrients and the minerals we need and blah blah blah, it's better. But yeah, I think about that. You talk about the chicken with the cockroach and like, oh, I'm not eating your eggs. And I think of a teenager with a Slurpee and a candy bar and I don't know, something made of like textured soy protein taco. And I think, how are you even functioning? Our bodies are insane. I mean,
I
it has a
know.
cost, but it's amazing that we can do
It
it for a
doesn't,
while.
and the sad thing if more people just pay attention, like, is the body's an amazing thing. And like, I've had a lot of injuries. I mean, you know, with all the stuff I've done, four dislocated shoulders, 11 broken ribs, two dislocated, broken elbow, broken fingers, broken feet, two bruised kidneys, a cracked coccyx, teeth broken, seven concussions, and I'd do every bit of it
Heavens.
again. I wouldn't give any of it up. Because I was using my body in ways that were so much fun and so cool. You know, that's just, I, you know, I mean, I've been to all of the United States and parts of Canada and Mexico and Iceland. And I've been to all these cool places and I've gotten to experience and I've gotten to climb Mount Rainier over at 12,000 feet. And I've been, you know, up on, you know, and seen glaciers up there. I'm a Florida boy, you know what I mean? Yeah. And mountain bikes on these. I was just mountain biking Snoqualmie Pass in 1996. They had a Bigfoot sighting that day. I didn't get to see it, but I was like, like, hey, cool, you know. But you know, I'm good with it. But you know, there's so many things that you know people just get. Look, our body was designed to move. What is designed to walk 19 miles a day or something like that? Our
Yeah.
bodies were designed to move, not sit around. And even here in my office, I have my desk and I have a stand-up desk.
Yeah.
I have them both. You know, I walk around the office. A lot of times I walk around the office here barefoot, you know.
I heard a presentation that was talking about current research a couple years ago, and they were saying just paper after paper has showed that sitting is actually worse overall for your body than smoking, which is
Yes,
fascinating.
I don't doubt that, you know. And
Yeah.
what's it do too? Then people get complacent. It's if you sit, the longer you sit, the easier it is to sit.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, no, I want to do some David Goggins. I want to be uncomfortable at plenty times every day, you know, because you know you're living in and you're feeling stuff and all. You know, you do. It's like running. I've run since I was 15 or 16 to stay in shape for motocross. I've run all these years, and the last few years I've had a little bit of trouble with plantar fasciitis, but overall I've been injury free for the most part, you know, except for like accidents where I got hurt doing something, you know, but from running itself, repetition and injuries, I've been relatively injury free. But man, I just love to run. You know, there's something about it. You know, you're clearing your mind out, you know, your body, how you feel. There's something really cool about it. I don't even, you know, primal, I guess. But it's just really cool to go out and go for a run. Same with a bike. I mean, look, I spent over 4 hours on a bike last Saturday morning. You don't do that if you don't like it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy it. And then I came home, I hung out with Huckleberry a little bit, I read a little bit, and I jumped on my motorcycle and went riding it for a couple hours. That was fun, you know. So just want to have some, you know, I just want to enjoy myself. And Sunday was my birthday, so we all went out and had a big breakfast at a place and, you know, hung out. And it was all goofy and stuff, you know.
Happy birthday.
You get a bunch of rednecks together. It's just ridiculous.
You laughed a lot. That's what happened.
Stuff like that, you know. You know, so it's just the most ridiculous thing, but a lot of fun, you know.
To wrap it up, I think,
I was just going to say there's some really, they breathe really well for rednecks because I've got them all like using the breather and I'm on them all the time. Like, y'all need to use this. And I make sure I hold them accountable, you know?
Well, breathing really well makes it so you can laugh longer. So that helps you and everyone else.
Absolutely. Well, it does, you know, and the thing is, I mean, if you've ever had the breath knocked out of you or something or been in a stress, you know, grow up in Florida, you know, you live in the water. I mean, luckily we don't have fins instead of fingers and feet, you know, we spent so much time in the water, but I've been in situations, you know, through surfing or through other stuff in the water, in a triathlon, the beginning of a swim of a triathlon can be very chaotic and not violent, like people hitting you, but you do get hit a lot and get pushed under and stuff like that in the beginning, the very beginning. When breath is held from you or you have a difficulty breathing because the breath's been knocked out of you, it's not a good feeling. And look, if we can help somebody with the breather with COPD or Parkinson's or whatever, not breathing well, we can help them breathe well, man. I think that's an amazing thing. And, you know, and even athletes or singers, you know, to breathe well. I mean, you know, when you're gasping for air, you know, at the top of the hill or something, it helps if, you know, if you can get breath control and get your breath back quicker and you know, your heart rate variability. I think you said you've got a guy coming on soon. You're going to be discussing yeah. that. I can't wait to hear that one. I am enjoying your podcast, by the way.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. I think seven of them I've listened to so far. Seven or eight. I'm getting them. I'm getting them down.
So I know we need to wind this down, and I think that's perfect. A perfect segue back into an encapsulation is just whatever you're loving in your life. I mean, whether that sounds like the life that William leads, which sounds ideal to me. Whoa, free range, lots of fun, lots of activity, lots of all of that. That sounds amazing to me. But even if that isn't, you know, someone in the audience's dream, if it's something else, it's just, what do you want to do with your life? What makes it good now? And how can you breathe and move more and engage in what it is that you love to do? Even if what you love to do gives you the litany list of injuries that you just listed.
Yeah. Hey,
or has other effects. That's still a life. It's a life. That is our anti-aging. That is our vitality, is actually being engaged in what you want to do now, mindfully, with your time, with your energy, with your resources, and with your breath. I am just so grateful for you coming in today and for sharing your stories and your wisdom and from in the trenches, from like somebody who's been doing this for decades and will continue to do it for as long as you get the opportunity to. I'm so grateful to rub shoulders with you and to be reminded of how we make a life with vitality is, you know, putting our vitality into it.
Yeah, thank I appreciate it. So I do. I enjoy it. We got one shot here. I want to make the best of it as much as I can, you know. And I make mistakes like everybody else and mess up. It's like, hey, man, you know what I mean? And the thing, just one real quick. I have a lot of friends that don't do all the athletic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but we talk about books, music, whatever. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't tell everybody how to live their life. I live the way I live. I choose to live. And I'm fortunate that I'll stand up for myself. You know, if I don't want to eat something, I'm in a place, I go, hey, man, I don't want to eat that. You know, and I just don't do it. You know, sometimes people say, hey, man, that's kind of not cool. But I'm not putting some of that stuff in my body, you know what I mean? And I'm good.
Well, I like what you said, like, eat or do what feels good to you.
Right.
Like, read or watch or engage with or support what feels good to you. I mean, we all have a note to play, and when we all play our notes, it makes a beautiful symphony. Like, just because you want to do motocross doesn't mean somebody else wants to.
Or run. Like, I don't push running on
vice
people.
Versa,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta love that stuff and all, you know. But live. Yeah, that's what I'd say to everybody. Just live, go out and live your life and enjoy yourself, and you know, and it's all. And the thing is, most people are pretty good. I think there's a country song about that, actually, but they really are. Most people you'll meet are pretty good people overall. I've traveled all over and met people all over, and
yeah,
you know, I've mountain biked people I never met until that morning. You know what I mean? Or run with people I've never met. I was up in Virginia recently, and I went to run Manassas on a Sunday morning. I couldn't remember the trail, and there was a group of people right there. They enjoyed. I never met these people in the day of my life, and I went running with them on the whole trail system. They're in Manassas, on the battlefield of Manassas, beautiful running in the morning. And you know, most people, like I said, if you just say hi, put the phone down. You know, I see people walking their dog, pushing their stroller, and they're looking at their phone. I'm like, man, put your phone down, pay attention to your baby, point things out, love on your dog. You're good.
I was actually in Vegas. We were at the biggest chiropractic conference in the world. That's where I saw Goggins and Simon Sinek and just a bunch of really, really neat people. But during a little break, we went out to find somewhere in Vegas that we could eat quickly. And there's this sort of alleyway with cool shops on it and an In-N-Out burger. And there's a big old fountain. And I sat on the edge of the fountain. And instead of pulling out my phone, I just enjoyed the sun. Right here, it's winter where I live.
Yeah.
And in Vegas, it's still warm. So I just breathed that sun in. And there was a lady sitting next to me that I started talking to. She was from Canada. And then the next day, we went to the same place. And I spoke to a woman who was from Costa Rica and one from Guatemala. And we just sort of people watched and talked. And I actually was thinking, wow, I'm grateful for the presence here. Who you can meet and who you can talk to in 15 minutes with presence is amazing. And P.S., sleep and meeting new people are some of the very best things you can do for your brain. Some of the very best things you can do. So,
can I mention just one more thing too before we go?
Sure.
I appreciate chiropractors.
Me too.
I spent a lot of time in chiropractors' offices over the years, okay?
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say that, I mean, anymore you go to a doctor, first thing you want to do is put some drug in you from Big Pharma, okay?
Yeah.
I don't do that. Like when my son raced motocross, I said, hey, dude, it's not if you get hurt, it's when you get hurt. I said, you're not taking the pain pills they're going to get. I've had friends that have gone to prison and are not here now because they were regular people and they got hooked on opioids and it ruined their life. Okay. And I told Lance, I said, if they're giving you a pill and they're giving you a laxative with said pill, it can't be all that good for your system. All right. So we're not doing that. And when he broke his wrist and he broke his tib fib, he went through a lot of pain and stuff. Yeah, he had, I mean, they put him under for surgery and stuff. And the hospital, once he got out there, they send you home with opioids and all. And that went right. That got flushed immediately, okay?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, pain's weakness leaving the body, all right, buddy? We're going to get used to this here. And if you're going to pay, but you're not going to be doped up and stuff. And I wouldn't allow. So the chiropractors have always been more open-minded. I started going to chiropractors back when I discovered one in the late 80s when I was doing triathlons a lot and race. I had some sciatic issues. You know, and I go to the doctor and they're like, oh, just take this. I'm like, yeah, I'm good, man. I'm out of here. So I go and, you know, I found a chiropractor and, man, I wish I could remember the lady's name, but man, it was amazing. I mean, the sciatica was so bad. I was having dreams at night that I had a leg length discrepancy. That's how bad the pain was. But she was amazing. And the adjustments I've had, you know, with the plantar here and there, you know, they're more open. Chiropractors, what I found, have been more open-minded and kind of look at the whole situation instead of just wanting to reach for something and give you, hey, take this, call me in 2 weeks, you know?
That is a part of the basic chiropractic philosophy is to try to look at the whole body and look at it as though your body is making an intelligent choice when something hurts or when something doesn't feel right. Like, we are a system that is so complex and so interconnected that if something is getting our attention, we look at, all right, well, what could be causing that? And what causes that up the chain and up further up the chain and further up the chain? and how can we help it? So how I look at my job as a chiropractor is helping the body be more and more free. It's like, to me, a series of pulleys and gears that fit together, as if we're like that biomechanical part is our biomechanical sort of machine. And I look at it as if, man, if these gears are jammed, just like in any other kind of machine, it's not going to work well. And that's just at the basics. Add in your nervous system, add in your energetic system, add in all of those other things, and it gets so complicated. But if we can just make the body more and more free by getting to some of the root causes in whatever way we can, through chiropractic, through therapy, through nutrition, through whatever, then we just have more and more life. There's just more and more capability. The opiate crisis is insane. At least we know enough about it now that people will say that the opiate crisis, and we know. But there are just so many other options for pain. There's so many other options for health, and there's so many other options for vitality. And I am grateful that I am in a profession and was trained that way to be some of the people on the forefront of standing for the freedom and for the connection.
And like you say, the gears and those things, if your mountain bike, your road bike, or your tractor, you know, you get adjustments on them, keep running smooth, you know what I mean? Same with the body and stuff like that. Instead, you know, I don't go and throw some opioid at my mountain bike or tractor. You get adjustments on it. You put good fuel in it, you know what I mean?
And we call it putting a smiley face sticker over a dash light. If you're like, needs attention, needs attention. I don't have time. Let's just cover up that dash light and it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, one final thing I'll say about chiropractors too, I found they tend to listen more. Like when you go in, my experiences is, you know, because I think they want to make the proper adjustment or whatever. And they want to listen to actually what you went through and what you're going through and like what you're doing. You know, they've always been more specific about, okay, are you running on road? You running on brick roads? Because a lot of brick streets where I am, or are you running on dirt roads and stuff too? Like, where are you running? What, you know, what shoes are you wearing? You know, they tend to be usually in better shape too than a typical MD that I found. The chiropractors do, probably more active, and so they maybe that's why they maybe that's what draws them to it too. You know, maybe there's that type of person that's drawn to that, but. That's my experiences with chiropractors over the years and all. So that's why I've always enjoyed talking to you or other chiropractors I talk to in the business here. It's fun.
Well, thank you. And as far as that goes, I think going to a chiropractor versus going to like a pain clinic, I think you ask questions according to the answers that you have. If you only have the answer of referring for surgery or of giving a pill to block the pain, then you don't really need to know a lot of information. But if the answers that you have are going into the causes of problems and how do I tape? How do I support? How do I adjust? What exercise do I need? Then you need more questions. And that's the same.
Absolutely.
You know, a good handyman will ask a lot more questions too.
I ask a ton of questions. I know they're like, my gosh, this guy don't shut up, man. Like...
On that tune, we both need to shut up so people can go on with their days. Thank you so much for joining us, Will. And for everybody else, I sure look forward to seeing you next time.
All right, we'll see you. Keep up the shows too. I like them.
Such a fun conversation. My takeaways from that would be, number one, breathe. Breathe right now. Breathe through your nose. Breathe into your lower ribs or into your deep pelvic floor. Just breathe intentionally. And if you want to step up your game, breathe against resistance. It helps decrease your low back pain, increase your stamina, speed your illness recovery, and helps your voice be heard. The best device that I have found for breathing against resistance is the breather. And I talk about it so much, they gave me a coupon code. So if you go to pnmedical.com or just look up the breather device and you put in the code Dr. Becca, all caps, then you can get 20% off. And I put a link for both of those things in the show notes with a reminder of the code. Number two, what helps us age well is also what helps us live well now. We have so much more vitality in our lives by showing up for our lives in a way that we like. Be that TV or no TV, free-range grandparenting or super structured grandparenting, which leads me to number three. Our way doesn't have to be anyone else's way. Play your note in the symphony of life, and we'll all be better for it. Links for all those things are in the show notes, and I'm super excited to tell you about next week's guest. His name is Dr. Aaron Blight, and he's the founder of Caregiving Kinetics. He's been named one of the top 100 healthcare leaders by the International Forum on Advancements in Healthcare. And he's an international speaker and a consultant about caregiving, aging, and healthcare. He's also a personal friend of mine and just a really stand-up guy. He shares vulnerably about what happened in his personal life that showed him how important it was to learn about caregiving. And he points out that most of us will be a caregiver at one point in our life or will be receiving caregiving. And wouldn't it be amazing if we knew how to take care of ourselves better and the people that we're caregiving for? We go over 5 ways to support a family caregiver. We go over the changes in roles that it takes when you begin caregiving for people that maybe are in your family or that are friends and those dynamic changes. And he talks about how we can support each other as we do it no matter what role we're in. So please tune in. It's so beneficial in helping your family dynamic relationships and also the relationships of those you're caregiving with. Tune in next week and I will meet you here.